Al will be forever the myth.
You're the king of kings, Al.
There's always a pecking order. The little peckers never mess with the big peckers. So I'm a rooster, and he's a chicken.
This episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast is brought to you by our sponsors, Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine. All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, where we talk to the legends of bodybuilding, and we also talk about the history of bodybuilding. And I am your host, John Hansen. And on today's show, we have a very special guest, someone you guys have requested, actually. His name is Gary Leonard, and Gary is, or was, the 1980 AAU Mr. America winner, back when the Mr. America contest was the biggest amateur contest in the country. And Gary was the winner of that show back in 1980, and then he had a short career with the IFBB. But at the time, Gary was one of the best amateur bodybuilders in the world, which was saying something back then. We're going to have a really good interview with Gary Leonard coming up in a second. At the end of our interview with Gary, I'm going to read another article. This one is from one of our loyal listeners, Scott Barron. And Scott, I think I mentioned this before on the podcast, he was the lucky winner of a raffle that took place at the 1992 Arnold Classic. And Scott got to go visit Arnold in California on a movie set, which I think Arnold was making Last Action Hero at the time. And he actually got to go work out with them, and unbelievable experience. And they used to do this at the Arnold Classic probably in the 90s. I think they only did it for a short period of time. But Scott wrote about his experience for Muscle Mag International, so I'm going to read that article on the podcast as soon as we get done with our interview with Gary Leonard. All right, and right off the bat, I do want to mention that we are brought to you by our sponsor, Old School Labs. I've been with Old School Labs for several years now. This is the supplement company that draws on the wisdom of the golden era of fitness and bodybuilding to offer unique supplements for the discerning athlete. Old School Labs is the only brand that I use, trust, and associate my name with. It's the brand that I used to win the Natural Mr. Universe in 2012. You may have heard of their award-winning fat burner, which is called Vintage Burn. It's the world's first muscle-preserving fat burner. Or Vintage Blast, which is their two-stage pre-workout. Or Vintage Brawn, which is the triple protein isolate powerhouse. It's packed with eggs, milk, and beef protein. Their products have no proprietary blends, no artificial flavors, colors, or sweeteners. Old School Labs is also the home of 1983 Mr. Olympia Samir Banute and bodybuilding legend Tom Platz. So use the discount code LEGENDS12 and you will get 12% off your order at oldschoollabs.com. Old School Labs, supplements that make sense. All right. And speaking of Samir, we also did an interview with Samir last week. I did it on Skype so I can make a video interview of that. And this was part two of our interview with Samir. We did part one, I think, back in 2014, maybe 2015. So it's been at least 4 or 5 years. So I finally got Samir to download Skype. I always give him shit about this, but he finally was able to get it on his phone. And we did do part two of our interview. So we will probably also put that on the podcast, but I want to get a chance to also put it up on video, because we started off talking about 1982. Where Samir got fourth place in that year's Mr. Olympia. And that was really the first time that he ever came into a show really, really ripped. If you were around back then, you remember Samir always had this great symmetry and proportion. He had just had this incredible body, very small waist, wide shoulders. Everything was in proportion, a real classical build. But he just could never come into contest in shape. He'd always be a little bit off. Sometimes he'd be way off, holding a lot of water. So he was finally able to figure it out in 1982. And he took, as I said, fourth place in that Mr. Olympia. Chris Dickerson was first. Frank Zane was second. Casey Viator was third. And a lot of people felt Samir could have won that show, Peter McGough being one of them, or he at least could have took second. So Samir did go on to win the Olympia the next year when he repeated that condition and he came in even a little bit bigger. So we talked about the 82 and 83 Olympia. We also talked about the 84 Olympia where he only got sixth place. And that was the year that Lee Haney won the first time. And then Samir stayed away from the IFBB for several years and then came back in the later 80s. So anyways, it was a really good interview. Samir's always a great personality. He's got a lot of, charisma. He has a lot of passion for the sport. So it was a really good interview. So as I said, we'll probably put that up on the podcast too. And I know this week I was supposed to do the anniversary show, but man, guys, I just got to apologize. I'm so busy with work that I just don't have the time to do it, but I will try again for next week. It's just this work takes up so much time for me. I just don't have the time I need to, and that takes a lot of time to put those anniversary shows together because I got to go back and listen to all the, I don't listen to every show, but I go back and pick out the ones I want to use and I have to get the right spot. So it is pretty time intensive. So I will try to get part one up next week because I think you guys will really enjoy that. And what else is going on? Oh, the Tampa Pro. I went to the Tampa Pro this weekend out here in Tampa, Florida. It was a two-day show, Friday and Saturday. And I only went on Saturday, but I did get to see Dexter Jackson win. I think it was his, I think it's 29th pro show win. And now he is going into the Olympia, and he has got to be one of the favorites because, of course, Sean Roden, the returning Mr. Olympia, will not be competing because of the problems he's going through with those rape allegations. And he has been basically kicked out of the Olympia for this year. So he will not be there. And I don't think Phil Heath will be there either because he's still recovering from his hernia surgery. And Kai Greene will not be there. So it's pretty wide open. A lot of people are picking Brandon Curry. I would put money on Brandon also, but who knows? Dexter could really pull an upset, and that would be something. It would be like 11 years since he won the Olympia. He won it in 2008. So to come back 11 years later at the age of 49, he will be 50 in November. That would be amazing. That would never have happened before. So Dexter would really create history, and it's possible. You know, it could happen. He looked really, really good yesterday. He beat Luke Sandow, who I believe is from Australia. And Luke was really big. First time I got a chance to see him. And I was very impressed with him. Real big guy. Pulls off a great vacuum. But Dexter looked really good at night. And he eked out the win. But it was really close. Luke was a bigger guy. And they were both a little bit off. They weren't both totally shredded, because I'm sure they're both peaking for the Olympia, but Dexter was about as close as you can get to being in top condition, and I'm sure he'll be even better when the Olympia comes in 6 more weeks. So that's going to be exciting. I will be out there with Old School Labs, so I will be checking it out. I had my, I think it was called a pre-op post or appointment with the doctor last week, and that's from the hernia surgery I got coming up in a couple of weeks, so it'll be on the 15th of August. So I need to get that done, and that is going to happen pretty soon. It'll be here before you know it, and I will be away from the gym for a long time, which is really going to suck, but I do want to get this hernia finally fixed. I've had it for about 7 years. It's not bothering me at all, but you can't see it when I get really ripped. So if I ever do another photo shoot or something, I just want to get it fixed. I haven't had surgery on anything since 2000 when I tore my bicep, so it's almost 20 years since I've had any kind of surgery. So it'll be something new for me, that's for sure. And like I said, that recovery phase is going to be tough because it's going to take about 6 weeks. I think 4 weeks I can't do any weight training at all, and that'll be right up to the 4 weeks where I go to the Mr. Olympia. So that won't be good, but what can you do? And then after that, after I get back from the Olympia, then I can start training with lightweights, but nothing heavy for another 4 weeks. So just have to go through it. Hopefully it'll go by fast, and hopefully the surgery will be successful. And they'll get it fixed, and then I'll be done with it. But other than that, my training is still going really, really good. I'm up to about 230. I'm really bulked up and big. I got some fat on me for sure, but I'm really enjoying my training because I'm so strong and I'm feeling good. So unfortunately, I'll have to stop this training. This power cycle is only going to last like 3 weeks, so then it'll be done. So I'm just going to keep training heavy and enjoy it while I can, because I know it's going to be a while after the surgery before I'll be able to train heavy again. I got some more good news. I've been talking a little bit to Albert Beckles. He just emailed me back today. I took a chance and emailed him. I think I did that before a few months ago, but I tried again. And he said he loves the podcast. So I guess he's listening to it, and he sounds like he's interested in doing an interview. So keep your fingers crossed on that one, guys. And hopefully we'll be able to get an interview with the great legend himself, Albert Beckles. That would be fantastic. So I told him I want to do it on Skype so we can make a video interview. But if he doesn't do that, then we will just do it by the phone. So whatever he's comfortable with, as long as we get a chance to talk to the great Albert Beckles, that would be good enough for me. All right, I did get a couple emails this week. So if you guys ever want to comment on the show, just email me at naturalolympia@gmail.com, and I would be happy to get your emails, and I believe them, read them on the air on our next podcast if you send them to me. So this one comes from George White, and George has emailed me before about the show, so thanks for emailing me again, George. And this is about Ruth Silverman, and he said, I'm just coming to the end of this interview. Superb job, John. Cool lady. Keep up the good work. George. All right. So a lot of people like that interview I did with Ruth Silverman. I got quite a few emails about that. So thank you guys for sending that. Mark Romanello said, since Bob Parrish doesn't want to be interviewed, how about you interview others to share stories about Bob? One of your guests did tell a great Bob Parrish story. Just compile the stories into one episode, similar to your Ed Corney tribute episode. I love your podcast. Big fan of you too since forever. When I saw your picture recently, I remembered you from an old bodybuilding ad where you were with a beautiful woman. I remember telling myself, I want beautiful women. I need to look like this guy. So that's when I started bodybuilding. I'm 47, but I worked out at Gold's Gym in Northridge, California when I was 14. I used to see Corey Everson, Albert Beckles, speaking of Albert Beckles, Tony Pearson, Chuck Norris, and so many other bodybuilders. I didn't realize how lucky I was. Gold's was just two blocks away. Anyways, headed to the gym. Have a great day. All right. Thank you, Mark. I don't remember what ad he's talking about there, but I didn't do too many ads with beautiful women, so I'll have to narrow that one down. This was from D.D. Cunningham, and D.D. says, hello, John. I just wanted to thank you for your podcast with Vic Downs. He used to be the pro at the small gym that was in the private Snooker Canada Club in the 1980s in Toronto. I knew him from there. Everyone loved him, even those who didn't use the gym. His name still comes up amongst us from time to time, and I was thrilled to hear him on the podcast and see that he's still thriving. If you have any contact with him, tell him that he's remembered and that I say hello. I was only a young thing back then. That club was around when I was 18 to 26. I just mentioned Vic again today when I was talking with someone else who won the World Muscle Model in 2012. It made me look up Vic again, and we saw the program. If he has an email he doesn't mind giving out, I will say hello on my own note. Thanks again. Pleasure to hear your show. Kindest regards. All right. That was a great email. I will look for Vic's email. I'm sure I got it. I think it was about a year ago I did that interview with him. So I'll send him your message, Dee Dee. That sounds great. I'm sure he would love to hear from you guys. All right. In regards to our Vince Taylor Part 2 interview, the guys over at Bodybuilding Nerds Radio, Scott and VJ, they really liked the interview, and they mentioned it on the show. So thank you, guys. Thanks for listening. And on my Facebook page, Vince himself, Vince Taylor, said, many thanks, my friend, John Hansen, and thanks again for the interview. God bless. Lee Haney said, absolutely amazing. That was great. Always great to hear from Lee. Sean Ray said, the quiet storm. Randy Lemieux said, a great champion. Jerry Scalise said, great champion and a great human being. And Vince replied, Jerry Scalise, thanks, my brother. Joey Folco said, greatness. Rick Valente said, I always thought Vince was amazing, great bodybuilder and a great poser, old school and a good guy. Jeff Preston, my old friend Jeff Preston, said, great interview, John. At the 91 Olympia, Vince stole the show, and at the same time, he showed so much respect for Lee Haney and his routine. John Torelli said, with all due respect to all the great champions that competed against Vince Taylor, he was my favorite, especially at his lighter body weight when he won the New York Night of the Champions. And Russ Crane said, incredible physique and photo, a true legend of bodybuilding. All right. Thank you for those comments, guys. And also, I wanted to mention this last, what was it? Tuesday was Arnold's birthday. Arnold Schwarzenegger, the king, greatest bodybuilder ever, was born 72 years ago, this last Tuesday on July 30th. So happy birthday to Arnold. I put this great photo on my Facebook page. It was from John Balick of that classic shot of Arnold doing a side chest with Franco in the background looking amazed. What a great photo. And John mentioned on that thread that that was just a random photo. It wasn't a photo shoot. I think he was just in the gym. Arnold was posing, so he took some shots of Arnold. That was probably one of the best conditions Arnold has ever been in. He was so big. So absolutely amazing photo. And it just boggles my mind that John Balick just took that shot just out of the blue. And he said that a a lot of the guys back then were just in the gym with their camera, and they weren't photo shoots. They would just take those shots randomly. So that really is amazing when you think of the shots that he took and also the shots that Art Zeller took. Just unbelievable photos, and they really stand the test of time as far as the history of bodybuilding goes. All right, so that's it for our emails. Like I said, if you guys have any suggestions or comments on any of our shows, I'd love to hear from you. Just email me at naturalolympia@gmail.com. And before we get to our interview with Gary Leonard, I also want to mention our Patreon supporters. I'm going to mention them by name because I appreciate you guys making this pledge every month. I really do appreciate your help. Boris Benchpress, obviously a pseudonym, but thanks, Boris. James Kerr, Mark Johnson, Robert Brown, and Scott Barron. And as I said, we're going to read Scott's article from Muscle Mag International. I'm going to read that at the end of this interview. And before we get to our Gary Leonard interview, also, I want to mention that we are brought to you by our other sponsor, Florida Alternative Medicine, where age is just a number. If you want to feel great, optimize your energy levels, burn fat, and balance your hormone levels to maximize your potential, then go see the experts at Florida Alternative Medicine and Weight Loss. They have a certified and knowledgeable staff that will work with you to achieve your goals and get you the results that you've been looking for. They offer a wide range of services that ensure you will not only look and feel amazing, but also be comfortable knowing that they're there for you every step of the way. Their competitive pricing, along with their quality products and services, are just a few reasons to give them a call. So call them at their office number in Tampa, Florida at 813-922-8939, or you can reach them at their website, which is flalternativemeds.com. Again, that's FL for Florida, alternativemeds.com, or their number 813-922-8939. And if you mention that you heard their ad on the Bodybuilding Legends podcast, they will give you a free consultation. Plus, they'll give you 20% off your order. All right. So that is it for our opening. And here's our interview with Gary Leonard, 1980 Mr. America. Here we go. All right. Welcome back to the Bodybuilding Legends podcast. And my special guest this week is Mr. Gary Leonard. And Gary was the winner of the coveted 1980 Mr. America contest, a contest that everybody in America wanted to win. Every bodybuilder in America wanted to win during that time. And then he spent some time as an IFBB pro bodybuilder. So it's good to have you on the show, Gary. How you doing?
I'm doing very good. Thank you, John.
All right. Thanks for joining us. I've been a big fan of your physique for many, many years. So it's good to finally meet you. Well, Gary, let's start at the very beginning. What got you into weightlifting and what got you into bodybuilding?
Well, first, I'm the youngest of four boys. And all of my older brothers were athletes. And I just kind of fell into that trend. And when I was 12, my older brother had started to work out. He got a weight set for Christmas and he started getting stronger. And he was becoming a better and better athlete. And even at 12, I saw the importance of it. So I ended up starting, I worked out. I joined this gym called Universal Dene, and it was 3 days a week, and it was $25 for 3 months, you know. And then, I just started working out then. And by the time I was 16, and basically I was working out during the summertime because in school, you know, at 12 years old, I was getting into junior high school, and I ran the hurdles and track. I played baseball, and I played football. And the training, I knew the training was helping, but I just really enjoyed it. You know, I liked the environment, going into a gym with a bunch of people that were like-minded. And, I actually had fairly decent results early on. I mean, I'll tell you, I was gifted with a pretty good physique. And then I was blessed with, obsessive traits. And honestly, John, I'm sure when you've talked to people in the past, and I know I've talked to world-class athletes, and I've asked them, you know, to get where you are, you know, has it taken dedication? And they go, yeah. And I go, would you say obsession? And they go, yeah, it's obsession.
You know,
and you think about, like, the guys nowadays, you know, I mean, it is 24/7, 365. And, you know, bodybuilding is in a unique class by itself, but... You know, at 16, I was in high school and I was really starting to look better and better, but I was also getting stronger and stronger. So I kept progressing. And my senior year in high school, I won Athlete of the Year, football.
Wow.
What I see happening, what I think with a lot of bodybuilders is they were athletes when they were younger. Many were athletes when they were younger, and they were weight training, and the training actually became more important than their sport.
Yeah, you know.
I mean, and for me, that's kind of what happened over time. I mean, I played some junior college football, and at that point, you know, I was 21, and that was the first year I entered. I was in the seven. No, I guess I was 22 or 23. I was my first Mr. America was a 78 Mr. America.
Okay.
And I placed third in my class. I competed in a few shows before that, like the Junior Mr. America, Junior USA, you know, out in California. My first show I ever won was the first show ever was the Novice Mr. Sacramento, and I placed fifth.
Okay. What year was that, Kurt?
That was I want to say 77.
Okay. Okay. And so when you were a teenager and you were in high school and you were weight training, you know, basically for these other sports, how did you become aware of bodybuilding? Like when you were going to the gyms, did you see any bodybuilders there, or did you see any of the magazines or anything?
Well, there were, the magazines were always around, you know, and there were a few guys in the gym that had pretty good physiques. There was a guy named Gary Hill, who was a sheriff's deputy in Fresno, and he was in the over 40 class, but he had these baseball biceps. You know, I mean, he wasn't, I kind of look now like he did, you know, that's the way I kind of see myself. I've got that old man muscle, you know, with the real thin skin.
Right, right.
You know, it just kind of, I can't ride a motorcycle because my skin flaps, you know. anyway, you know, there were a few guys like that, but I was really much more into the powerlifting, and because it was 3 days a week. I used to say arms and chest above the rest because it was a chest and arms physique that I had. You know, we did a lot of bench press, and we did a lot of shoulder press and a lot of arms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when I was really young, I really had, you know, muscular legs. My legs were actually disproportionately large. But
oh, really?
Because okay. I went years without working them. Once I started getting the bodybuilding bug, I realized, geez, I better start working my legs. But, you know, early on, there was a guy. Go ahead.
Was your football coach in high school, did he encourage you guys to work out? Because I know back in the 70s, a lot of coaches said, you know, you guys can't work out. It's going to make you slow. And they were very behind the times as far as, you know, weightlifting goes.
You know, we had a really lame gym at the high school. And honestly, nothing the coach said would have changed my mind. You know, I mean, the idea was to get bigger, stronger, faster, better. And,
yeah,
you know, because of that obsessive traits, I mean, I was the kid that was working out in the middle of the summertime in Fresno, California, doing stadium stairs when nobody else was around because I wanted to be better at my sport. I loved training. You know, I loved training. In fact, John, I'm going to tell you a little secret. You know, the reason I really got into bodybuilding was because it gave me a great excuse to train all the time. I love it. I still love it. You know, I mean, I've tempered it over the years, but I still love it, and I still work out, you know, so.
Were you the youngest in your family, Gary?
Yeah, I was the baby, and I was mom's favorite.
Your obsession into sports, was that because your brothers were also into it? Were you trying to, like, you know, match up to them?
I don't really think I ever really tried to match up to them. And honestly, my older brothers are better athletes than I ever was, you know, in their endeavors. Like I have one of my brothers was a state level high hurdler in high school. Mm-hmm. And my next older brother was he was a shot putter. He was a state level shot putter, you know, and I was lucky to make the city finals, you know.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
I'll tell you that the obsessive traits run in the family. My brother that was a hurdler, I live next door to him now. He ended up getting a sailboat, Victory 21, and was like national champion 7 years running.
Wow, really? That's impressive.
Yeah, and then he switched his obsessions and went from sailing to archery, and he's still an archer, you know, but he was shooting at state level championship archery, compound bow shooting, for years, and he still goes to competitions. My brother Scott, my next older brother, he was the shot putter. He ran a very successful business in Central California, and then got his second degree black belt in karate. I mean, it's just these guys. It's like I said, an obsession can be a curse, if it's combined with compulsion. But if you know you're obsessive and you can channel that obsession into something positive, like Arnold Schwarzenegger, you think he's not obsessed. I mean, you know, the guy's an obsessive. You know, yeah. He's just not compulsive. And so it's not required, but I think it helps as long as you understand that you have those traits.
Yeah. And I think a lot of bodybuilders are like that too. You know, I remember I was, and a lot of the guys I talked to, it's just, you become so obsessed with it. And sometimes I wonder if I could go back and do it all over again, if I would have the energy and the, you know, the desire to do all that again. I think about all the stuff I did. I'm like, wow, you know, I don't know if I could do all that again.
You know, age tempers you too. I mean, I've tried to maintain myself, you know, and I've taken up a little more aerobic activity just because I want to be around. I want, with me right now, it's all about quality of life. You know, I'm trying to keep my joints in shape and keep the heart pumping and keep the blood pressure low and, you know, keep the cholesterol down. All that stuff that happens when you're 64 years old, you know, and
yeah,
I'm just quality of life.
Right. So when you were in high school and your physique started to develop, then were you thinking about doing bodybuilding, or were you just thinking more along the lines of an athlete?
When I was in high school, I was playing football. And again, you know, I wasn't really great at any individual sport, but I was good at all of them. You know, that's why I won the athlete of the year. I was good at all of them. I wasn't great, or I didn't really excel at any of them. And my goal, one of the reasons I worked out and I trained so hard in the summertime, is I wanted to be a professional football player.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, after a while, I mean, I ran like Earl Campbell without the physicality of Earl Campbell. You remember Earl Campbell?
Sure. Yeah.
Earl Campbell was a locomotive. He liked to run over people. I was like Clyde Krasnoff. I just ran into people. You know, I was a fullback. You know, I would. And I mean, I had some physicality. I was probably 185 pounds my senior year. But now the fullbacks in high school are 230 pounds, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a totally different ballgame. Running
4.54s, you know?
Right. Right. So when you got out of high school, did you plan to go to college and pursue the football career?
Well, what I did, I went to Fresno City College, which is what my older brother did. And I played football there for a couple of years. I actually redshirted my first year and then played a couple of years and separated both my shoulders twice.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and that was kind of the end of my football fascination. I just said, you know, this isn't going to cut it for me. But while I was doing that, I actually got my bench press up to a 475.
Wow, that's impressive.
I did a 4.25 incline. You know, I mean, I was powerful, and I was maybe 200 pounds, 205 pounds. You know, I mean, it was,
wow.
I was a powerful guy.
Yeah, really.
Still wasn't working my legs a lot. And then after a competition, like after the Novice Sacramento, and I realized, okay, now I think I'm going to start doing this. My next show was the Heart of California, the Mr. Heart of California. Cool. It was in Fresno, and a guy named Casey Snyder put it on. Casey's an old school bodybuilder. I think he passed away. Much sure.
Okay.
But that's when I decided that I needed to start working my legs. And what I did, because they needed the focus, and I hated legs, as I kind of convinced myself that was my favorite body part. And I dedicated my leg workouts on leg day. I just worked legs, and I just worked them, and they caught up. You know what I mean? But it's amazing how, you know, if you can change your focus, like I said, you know, you can channel your obsessions. That was like micro channeling my obsession into legs. So now I'm going to be obsessed with legs because the rest of my body's doing pretty well.
Yeah.
And the side benefit of working your legs really hard is everything else grows too. You know, I mean, it's a growth body movement. It's stimulating your entire body. So your whole body benefits from it.
Yeah. When you decided to do your first show, was it just kind of on a lark, or did you have like bigger ambitions when you started to do that? I mean, were you thinking maybe I'll be Mr. America one day, or?
No. The lark was exactly the word I was thinking of before you said it. You know, it was on a lark. I was in Sacramento. It was the it was a bench press contest, actually.
Okay.
I placed third in the bench press contest and fifth in the bodybuilding contest. And literally, I put on a pair of Speedos. And it was in a basketball gym, and the posing light was an incandescent bulb hanging on a basketball hoop.
Wow. Yeah, I've heard about those shows. Yeah.
It, you know, didn't shave, basically there was no preparation whatsoever, and I just did a couple of poses, kind of what I was doing when I was pro. You know, I just did a few poses and walked up singing. Right. But you know, it's that was kind of the start that tickled my interest, mm-hmm. and you know, I started. I mean, I don't know. It's kind of a process how you meld into it.
Yeah. So you did that Heart of America, then you started focusing on your legs, and then what was the next show after that?
I want to say that year, I think that was 78. That might be the first year I was really starting to come. The Knot of Sacramento was in 77. The Heart of California, I think, was in March of 78. Okay. And then I competed in the Junior USA and the Junior Mr. America in San Jose and in Austin, Texas. And then that's the year I went to Mr. America in Cincinnati.
Wow. So that was a pretty quick rise to the top then. You know, you're doing national level shows.
Yeah. I mean, I shot up in a hurry. I was pretty hot for a while there. And
you won the tall class in both the Junior USA and the Junior America.
Yeah. And then I got third in my class I got to tell you a little story though. I was sitting up by the pool at the hotel in Cincinnati.
Okay. For the Mr. America.
My training partner came back with me and, I'm laying on this mat, kind of half asleep, you know, just soaking up the sun, and I see these legs go walking by. Yeah, and you know who it was, right?
Tom Flats.
Tom Flats goes walking by, and I looked at my partner. I said, "What the heck am I doing here, man?" I'm laughing at the field. You know, I mean, I was destroyed. I was literally destroyed.
How'd you feel about Tony Pearson in that Junior America and the Junior USA? Because he won both of those shows. And you were winner in the tall class in both of those shows.
Yep. Tony, he was polished. He was hard. He had all it took. You know, I mean, and you know, Tony, I never got to know him too well, but he was always a gentleman. I noticed that about him. You know, whenever I had all my interactions with Tony were very, very nice. And I can't say that about all bodybuilders, but if I can't say something nice, I'm not going to say anything. So.
Right. And you beat John Brown in those shows too, future Mr. Universe.
Yeah.
Yeah, John was third, and you were first. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, but it's you know, when you get to a certain level, you know, especially in the pros, mm-hmm. first place to last place is almost a toss of a coin. You know, there are people, and I've shown up out of shape for shows. You know, I've been out of peak condition, but out of peak condition, you know, you're one of the things I think a lot of people don't understand is that your body won't react the same to the same stuff. You can't do the same thing every show.
Yeah, right. It changes.
Your body changes. You know, your body chemistry changes. The slightest thing, being nervous can soften you up. You know, I mean, you know, your adrenals kick in and boom, man, you retain fluid, you know? So you just can't do the same thing. I don't know how the guys do it nowadays because they all seem to just look incredible when they get up there on stage, but
yeah. So tell me about that Mr. America. Cause that was a kind of a controversial Mr. America in 1978. That was the one I think Ron Tufel was predicted to win. And then, Tony Pearson beat him, but that was a really great show. I mean, there's a lot of great competitors in that contest. And you did really good. You got third place in the tall class and beat out some really big names.
Yeah, I was lucky. I was I was lucky. I was tall enough.
Right.
I tell you, the lower classes, you know, the shorter classes, those guys were pretty scary good. You know, and Ron was pretty upset with it. He was pretty angry.
Yeah, I remember he walked off stage, right?
Yeah. He just walked off stage. And me, I was on cloud nine. I was like, holy crap, you know, I did great. And like I said, and Tony was always gracious. You know, I think he was a good champion. You know, I think he did a great job.
Yeah.
Let's see. Was it Dave Johns or Manny Perry? Who won
Manny
the
Perry.
That day?
Manny Perry. Manny Perry got first. Clint Barile got second.
Oh, okay. Yep. I remember Clinton.
Yeah.
That was a long time ago, dude.
Right, I know. 1978, yeah, that was a few years back.
Yeah, right? 41 years.
Now, what was the feedback from, like, the bodybuilding press or the judges? Because I remember reading about you back in the magazines, and they always were pretty complimentary about your physique. They said, this guy's really got great potential and he could be a future Mr. America winner. Were they coming up to you after those big national shows and talking to you?
Yeah, I was approached by a lot of people that were very complimentary. And, you know, it's I never really had any offers to, you know, do anything stupid, you know, to win or anything like that. People were just complimentary, and it was very different for me to be sought after as much as I was. You know, I mean, it was unusual for me, and I don't think I really got caught up in it. You know, I've always tried to remain as humble as possible, and that's another thing. If there's any suggestions I would tell people, it's, you know, be humble, because, you know, there's always somebody bigger, better, faster, stronger. Trust me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when you get to a certain level, you know, with local contests, you know, people will train now for 3 years for a local show, and they might win it. But then when they go to a state show or a bigger show, now they have all the local show winners there.
Yeah.
And then each level, you know, increases. And so I was just, I had a wave that year in 78. I had a wave that took me to national recognition. I mean, it was amazing how fast that happened.
Yeah, it was. And, yeah. Because it was really, after you started, you got to the top.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it was meteoric, you know, and so I don't think I really had time to let it go to my head. It was like, geez, you know, now it's in my head. I'm not getting a big head.
Right. How did it feel like going into an individual sport like bodybuilding? Because you were in all these team sports, and now you're being recognized individually, you know, as someone special and someone who's got the potential to go all the way to the top.
You know, John, I'll tell you and this is something I haven't told a lot of people, but I honestly never really liked the competition.
Oh, really? Okay.
Well, like I said, the competition gave me a reason to train. I love training, and I love going to the competitions. I hated being judged. Being judged, you know, and and that was always hard for me to accept. And, you know, and I didn't win a whole lot of shows. I placed high in a lot of shows, and I had a pretty good fan base. You know, fans were always complimentary, and you know, but I didn't really, like I said, the competition really just gave me a reason to train. I love training. And, you know, and I tried doing some personal training for a while, you know, helping people out. And I didn't really like it. You know, people didn't have the same motivation I had. And it was hard for me to understand why. Well, why aren't you working harder? You know, I mean, there were times when I take, you know, I mean, it's like, well, let's go do leg presses. And I'd say, what's the most you've ever done? They'd say, I did 5 plates for 10 reps. And I said, okay, well, let's get started. And we'd go up, and I'd get 5 plates on there, and I'd have them do 20 reps. You know, I mean, I'd encourage them, and they would do 20 reps. And I'd say, okay, so why haven't you worked that hard before?
Yeah.
You know, that's what you have to do.
Right.
So.
What was your training like at that time, Gary? Were you going like 6 days a week, training each muscle group like twice a week?
At that time, yeah, pretty much. It was, you know, each muscle group was getting it 3 times a week. And then when I threw the legs in, when I started working legs really hard, when legs have their own day, then almost the same routine I do now. I did chest and arms one day, back and delts one day, and legs one day.
Okay.
I did abs and calves every day. Abs and calves every single day. And, you know, as I developed, I would work out until I got tired. And until I started aching or I didn't feel quite as strong. And then I'd take a day or two off. But I would train 10 days straight and then take a day or two off, you know, and on days off, I'd go out and ride a bicycle or do something physical, you know, just to get the body pumping, you know, give the body a little rest, eat good, rest well, and then start hitting it again. You know, I mean, it wasn't, I mean, I had keys to gyms. I'd work out Christmas Day, you know. I mean, like, it goes back to that obsession thing.
Yeah. Were you doing more volume back then? Because I know Mensur was popular around that time, and a lot of people were trying his heavy-duty system of, you know, low volume, high intensity.
No, I did high volume. I did high volume, high intensity.
Okay.
You know, here's another thing, John. People used to ask me, you know, well, I want to get bigger, so should I do more weight and less reps? And to get cut, I do more reps and less weight. And I said,
right.
Why don't you get big and cut? Do more weight, more reps. You know, I mean, right. You know, you could, and, you know, there's some things that, you know, and I don't know if anybody ever said this. I kind of developed this myself. I'm sure somebody out there has it, but I tell people, you know, you can train to failure. And that was a big deal with Mike. Mike said, train to failure. And here's my thoughts on failure. There are two types of failure. You have mental failure and physical failure.
Mm-hmm.
Physical failure is injury or death. Okay. Right. So all other failures fall into that mental part. So, people like Mike could push himself very close to that physical failure, and probably he got injured just as well, mm-hmm. as Ray. You know, they would get injured because they push themselves a little bit past that physical part.
Yeah.
You know, and that's, you know, and it, I mean, if you look at Olympic athletes, you know, when they get injured, typically they get injured pretty good. You know, it's usually not a nagging injury because they're pushing themselves past that point of mental failure to the point of physical failure.
So, yeah, you know, exactly.
But the closer somebody can push themselves to physical failure without breaking it, the better results they're going to get.
Yeah, I remember Bill Perley used to always say that. You know, he said, you know, don't train all the way to failure. Leave a little bit in reserve. Train hard, but don't go all the way to failure.
Yeah, Bill Perl is a true gem, too.
He sure is. Man, yeah.
You know, he just a big, warm, friendly handshake, and always a big smile on his face, you know. Just
yeah.
A great guy.
Yeah, you probably met him back then, right? Because you were in sort of that same area of California, right? Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, and he's he actually lives up in the Northwest now. I think he's in Oregon, has a ranch, and
yeah, mm-hmm. Right.
So,
well, and what was your diet like back then, Gary? Because I know a lot of guys did the low carb thing, right, when you're getting ready for a show.
Yeah.
Not really.
You know, nutrition was real important when I was in the amateurs,
mm-hmm.
and even up to the Mr. America. I was taking protein powder supplements and. In the 79 America, the one in Atlanta, I did the tuna thing. And to this day, I haven't had tuna. I can't take tuna anymore.
Wow.
You know, and I mean,
40 years
so this guy, yeah, this guy just insists on tuna. You know, I mean, when they're getting ready for a show, that's all they have is canned tuna. And I just, it's like, ew.
Yeah, I know that was popular back then.
Yep, and you see, and then with the protein supplements, you know, milk and egg protein. I worked in a health food store, and the guy bought me a 50-pound bag of milk and egg protein. Came in one day with it on his shoulder and said, "Here, eat that." You know, I was probably eating 400 grams of protein a day. You know, just not that that's a healthy thing.
Yeah.
You know, later on, I realized that it's much better to eat. You know, eat protein, not something, you know, but eggs are good. You know, they got some fat in them, but eggs are good. And meat, you know, chicken, fish. Up here, I eat a lot of game. I'm a hunter, so I get deer and elk. And, you know, pretty much we stock our freezer in the fall. In fact, the season's coming up.
Oh, wow. Where you living out here?
Up in North Idaho.
Oh, okay.
Bonner's Ferry. I'm about 25 miles south of the border.
Okay, great. So let's talk about 1979, because after 78, you did really well. You took first in your class at the Junior America, Junior USA, and then at the America, you got third. So then 79, you go into the Mr. California in the spring, and you got second in the tall class to Larry Jackson, who was a really great bodybuilder.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I like him. He was a character and a half, too. I mean,
really?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I know I could have done better. I can't mm-hmm. honestly, I remember a little bit about it. You know, that's a long time ago. And God knows I've burned some brain cells up over the years. So, I think that was the only show I entered that year, wasn't it?
No, because right after that, you did the, you did the Junior Mr. America, and you got second there to John Brown. John Brown and Robert Jockiewicz won the overall. Remember that one?
Yeah. Yeah. And John was another guy that was just – he was a good guy.
You know, yeah.
I, like
yeah.
I said, know, he was a gentleman, and he had a just a beautiful build, that little wasp waist, you know, and he was tall.
Yeah. And Mike Christian was third, so you beat a future superstar, Mike Christian.
Yeah, I know. And I'm friends with Mike on Facebook now, and that's another neat guy, you know, like Lee Haney, Mike Christian, Charlie Glass. These are all just they're icons, and they're incredibly great people. You want to talk about humble people? You know, those guys, they're humble.
Yeah. Yeah, Lee Haney's another class act. I mean, he's just such a great guy.
Yeah.
So in the America that year, that was another huge show. I think that was in Atlanta, right? And that was the one Ray Mensah won the overall, but you took first in the tall class. So you really hit peak condition in that one.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you a little story about that. I lost weight for the for that show. I was probably 245. I got down to about 200 pounds.
Wow, 45 pounds. That's a lot.
Yeah, I'd lost a lot of weight for it. And during prejudging, you know, back and you can tell nowadays, you know, when they prejudge, they pull you out, and the more you called out for prejudging, usually the better you're doing, right?
Right.
And I mean, you've seen shows. I mean, you've been in shows, so you know that's kind of the way it works.
Sure.
I got called out for like three comparisons in prejudging.
And that was it.
And while I'm standing on stage, they're calling everybody out for comparisons. That was tall class.
Yeah, tall class.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they still had a tall class in that year. And they're calling all these guys out. And I'm sitting back there, and I'm starting to feel really bad. Like, okay, I lost too much weight. I've blown the America. You know, especially after California and the, you know, junior. I've already played second a couple of times. It's like, God, you know, I've done something wrong. And I remember after prejudging, sitting out in the theater, it was a Fox theater, and I cried. I was by myself, and I started crying. Yeah, I mean, I was by myself, and I go walking out, and I was mobbed by people.
Huh.
They came up and said, dude, you're going to win this thing. I said, what?
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, I mean, what a great story.
Yeah, it was incredible. I mean, it's just, holy cow, you know? And so I went out and had a whole bunch to eat, you know, and then got ready for the night show. But
yeah
that was one of those times that just really felt good.
Yeah. What'd you think of Ray Mensah? Because he won the overall, and I think that was probably the best Ray ever looked.
Iron Man magazine, after that edition, came out with, it had Ray on the cover.
Yeah, I remember that.
It had me on the back cover.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And they did that on purpose, so you could get a side-by-side comparison of the two physiques.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. Because they told me, they said, yeah, we did that on purpose, Gary. And I said, well, good, thank you. And, of course, I thought I should have won.
Yeah, okay.
You know, but again, you know, there's first, you know, at that level, first and last, you know, is your it's a coin toss. It's very, very close. Mm-hmm. And it just wasn't my time. It was not my time to win. That's the way I wrote it off, you know, and I bore no ill will toward Ray for winning, for beating me. And I tried to curb my remarks, you know.
Right.
You know, it's always disappointing and you get a little angry, but you know, it is what it is, you know, and once it's done, it's done. The year I won, I'm sure there were people, you know, that thought Bronson Austin should win, you know, in the 80. I mean, I'm sure. So.
Yeah. What was the feedback from the judges after 79? I mean, were the judges or even like the reporters in the magazines, were they telling you should have won?
Yeah, many did. Yes. But, you know, again, you have to put those comments in context because they're talking to you.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm sure they didn't go up to Ray Mensah and say, hey, Leonard should have beat you, you know.
right, you know? Exactly. I mean,
that's one of those ways that I try to keep things in perspective is, you know, all right, these people are telling me how good I am. I just have to keep focused on what I'm doing. And that can be really hard, you know, that can be really hard.
And they had body part awards back then. You won best arm, so that was always a strong body part for you, huh?
My, you know, arms, abs, I won some abs, and a couple of times I won best chest, and, you know, But here's my take on body parts too. Unless you win every single body part, that means you have a weak spot.
Yeah.
Right?
That's a good point, right?
Chest, abs, back, and you got weak legs.
Right. Yeah, they're telling you something, right?
Yeah, it's like, well, that means that the rest of my body has to catch up to my arms.
Yeah, right, exactly. So did you know any pro bodybuilders at that time, Gary? I mean, hanging around California and stuff, you must have met a lot of guys or seen a lot of guys.
But, you know, at that point, I wasn't really training down at Goals much.
Okay.
I was working out of Fresno. Yeah, mm-hmm. I was in Fresno, and I worked out at some different gyms. You know, there was that, like I said, that Danae's gym. I worked out there for probably 7 or 8 years, and then we had a Four Walls West racquetball gym, and Chuck Coker was the owner, and Chuck Coker was mm-hmm. involved with Universal Equipment early on.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, he was a pretty incredible guy. Harold Zinkin, you know, that group of people were kind of involved with the Four Walls West venture, and they had an incredible weight room. Incredible weight room.
Wow. And, okay.
Yeah, it was kind of strange. I mean, it was kind of a posh club, but they had this weight room. It was just like, I can't work out anywhere else. I mean, this was it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's talk about 1980. That was your big year. That was the year you won the Mr. America. But what's interesting is I saw you went in also in the Mr. California, which was probably in the spring. I think that was usually around May or something, right? And you got third place behind John Brown and Rory Liedelmeyer. So you took third in the California, but then you ended up winning the American later in the year.
Well, life has its ups and downs, doesn't it?
Right. What'd you think about Rory in that show? Because I heard some people said that was probably the best he ever looked in his whole career when he won that California.
Rory is a really good-looking guy, and he had a great physique.
Yeah, he did have a great physique. You
know, I look at pictures now, and it's like, geez, you know, I mean, how'd I ever compete against that? Yeah, seriously. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's like you lose track. You know, because it bodies kind of change and meld and over time, you lose track of what you really look like. You know, you kind of lose that perspective, and you can use photos, you can do whatever thing, but it's hard to be objective when you look at yourself. And I wouldn't say it's like anorexia, but you know, there's some dysmorphia going on there when you're looking at yourself. My mom one time was tailoring a pair of pants for me, and she touched my leg and she goes, you got a piece of wood in there or something? Cause it was so hard. You know?
Right.
And it was like, no, Mom, that's just me. You know, and she never realized how big I was.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, at one point I was 270 pounds and.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. It's massive. You know, I was huge and.
Yeah.
It's, you know, you just lose track. Of course, then I had to hold my breath to tie my shoes. You know, I was like,
Right. So did you believe in that, Gary, in the bulking up thing in the off season?
No.
Did it just naturally, was it really easy for you to get big like that?
No, I had to eat like crazy. I just liked eating a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I was powerful, but I was still bodybuilding. I wasn't at the 475 bench anymore. You know, what I did, when I said I did, you know, more weight, more reps. You know, a typical incline workout for me would be 10 sets of 10 with 315.
Okay. Wow.
You know, and just crank them out, you know, and then I'd go on to something else. And with legs, I was doing 1,200 pounds sets of 20 on the leg press machine.
Jeez. Wow.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, it's, you know, my workouts, you know, like this is when I went pro. I mean, after the America, I'm kind of skipping ahead. The workouts were really insane.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, things that I would match that workout against anybody on the planet.
Wow, really? I didn't know you were training that hard.
Yeah, it was nuts. I loved it. I mean, again, I competed so I could train.
Yeah, right. You love the training more than the competing.
Yeah, yeah.
But what I love about the guys back then, you know, because it was funny. I was just at my parents' house a couple weeks ago in Chicago. And I got all my old magazines in the crawl space. So before I left, I said, I got to grab some of these old magazines. I haven't seen them in like 30 years, you know. So I crawled in there and I was looking through all the boxes. I must have 1,000 magazines. So I was trying to find some good ones. And I grabbed a bunch of old Ironmen. So I know exactly what magazine you're talking about when you talk. Ray was on the front, and you were on the back, and then I've got the other one where you won the America, and you were on that one cover where you're standing in front of the water doing like a hands on hip most muscular. I got that one also. But when I looked at some of the weights, like a lot of the guys didn't weigh a lot, but their physiques were such high quality. You know, like you said, you were only 200 in that 79 America, but you had such a great physique, you would never would have known it.
One of my goals, John, was I always, regardless of how big I was, I wanted to look functional. I wanted to be functional.
Right.
You know, it goes back to the athletic thing when I was an athlete, you know, I mean, it's hard to comment on what's going on in bodybuilding today. I mean, these guys are, they're animals, you know, they're incredible. What they look like now or what the figurines used to look like back in the 80s.
Remember
the little sculptures, you know, that's what they look like.
Sure.
Now.
I know.
It's an extreme, and I'm not going to condemn it. I'm not going to condone it. You know, my personal feeling is I'm the Frank Zane, Arnold Schwarzenegger hybrid type. You know, I think, Frank was incredible. You know, just it, remarkable physique and you know, and an absolute master of posing. And posing is a lot more, you know, than just doing a routine. It's contorting your body to make it look exactly the way you want it to look.
Right.
You know, and like Arnold, you know, I don't think he ever really got a lot of credit for his posing, but every single movement of his was art, you know, because he would move and there'd be a little twist of the wrist and it would just add that much more. And every time he hit that pose, he hit it exactly the same way. You know, these guys were masters.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
and they could hide asymmetry, you know, they could hide asymmetry with a little hip twist and put one leg out to the side. You know, it was really amazing what they did. But they, you know, up to some point, they look functional, and now they're just they're figurines.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean that to sound derogatory.
It's no, I know, I understand.
That's what's winning now. That's what's winning.
I think that's kind of where bodybuilding lost its mass appeal, because I don't think the average person can really relate to the way the guys look today. But like you said, you had, even though you were a bodybuilder, a top bodybuilder, you had an athletic look. So it was more of an achievable, I guess, time of physique, or something people could relate to more, or something people would find more attractive, you know?
Somewhat, but, you know, you have to put it in time frames as well. Back in those days, I was a freak.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, you know, I was a freak, you know, compared to what was going on. You know, I mean, and, you know, you look at the Mike Christians and the Larry Jacksons and the John Browns and the Rory Liedlmeyers, you know, we were all a bunch of freaks at that time.
Yeah.
So, you know, the guys today, you can call them freaks, but it's like, it's just relative to the time frame of where bodybuilding is, you know? And
That's true.
So, I mean, it's like I said, I tried to have that athletic look. That was one of my goals.
Mm-hmm. Because you started off as an athlete.
Yeah. And like I said, I think a lot of bodybuilders have, and then the weights just become more important to them. The training becomes more important than the sport.
Yeah,
you know, or they get injured in a sport, you know, and say, well, let me try this for a while, and all of a sudden, bam, hey, I got a physique, you know.
Yeah, right. So when you're getting ready for that 1980 Mr. America, how did you feel about your chances as you were getting ready? Because, you know, obviously you hit your peak at that show, and you beat a lot of great competitors, and you won the overall title. So did you feel like this was going to be your year as the show was getting closer?
I thought it was my turn.
Yeah.
I was very focused. My training, I want to say I was probably one of the first cross trainers.
Oh, really? Okay.
Oh, well, I used to row a boat, you know, I mean, I'd go up in the mountains and we outside of Fresno, there's a lake called Huntington Lake. It's about 7,500 feet. And I'd go up there and rent a rowboat. In fact, actually, they stopped renting it. They just give it to me and say, hey, go ahead, take it off, you know, because they knew who I was and they knew I was getting ready for a show. And I'd row it. This lake's like 7 miles long. So I'd row it down to one end and then row it back. And the funny thing is they wouldn't let other people use a rowboat because they would get stuck and they'd have to go tow them back. But, you know, they say, well, we know you'll make it down and back. And I'd take lunch, you know, and my wife, and we'd row down to the end of the lake and have a picnic and row back.
That's cool. So tell me about the show. How was the show? That was in California, right? Wasn't it in Santa Monica?
There were so many competitors. I think there were 90 competitors in that show. I think my first Mr. America, I think there were 8 in the tall class.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, it wasn't a huge class. And maybe 20 or 25 in, you know, the middle height class, the medium class.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But in the 80 America, there were 90 competitors.
Wow. Unbelievable.
So it was a huge show. I had momentum.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to say it was mine to lose.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
It would have been easy had I been just the slightest bit off. It would have been a disappointment, and the judges, I would say, punished for it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I hit the mark pretty well.
I think Arnold was getting ready for that 1980 Olympia. I remember seeing pictures of he was in the audience, and there was a lot of people there, a really packed show.
Yeah. it was Southern California, you know, so it was a big show.
Yeah.
That was his last Mr. Olympia, and honestly, I'm glad he won. I think he was by far the best person there. I know a lot of people said it was bad, but, you know, you look at Arnold, and I think he was like 225 or 230. I mean, he wasn't really massive in that Olympia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he just looked good. And again, it goes back to the posing thing, though. I mean, the guy was just, he was gifted. Absolutely gifted.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Did he talk to you after you won the show that night?
Actually, I kind of bailed.
Oh, really?
I had a lot of family, and I remember going out and eating Tom's Number 5 chili. A lot of Tom's Number 5 chili.
Uh-huh.
And the next day we did a photo shoot, and I was about 200 pounds that show as well, and the next day I weighed 223.
Oh my god, you flew 23 pounds one day. Oh
yeah, and you want to hear something more bizarre. When I got home and I started on the pizza, I gained 54 pounds in 4 days.
Oh my god, crazy.
So now, and here's the heartbreaking part of this, John. I know, and that's, you know, people are going to hear that and just go, that's so unhealthy. You're absolutely right. It's absolutely
right.
Unhealthy. But, you know, I won. I was celebrating. Unfortunately, that's what kind of killed me for the Mr. Universe. I could not get it back.
Didn't get it back off, yeah. How many weeks was that there between the America and the Universe?
Oh, shoot. I can't remember. I think the America was in September.
Uh-huh.
And it wasn't that far off.
Oh,
you know, and so, I mean, the Universe is probably my biggest disappointment, you know. And,
oh, really?
And I did it to myself. You know, I mean, that was my show. That was my show to win. I could have won that show. And, you know, just I let America down on that one, you know, in the Universe.
Yeah.
After the Universe, I was in Manila, which was
okay.
That was hard as well. Oh, I met Ferdinand Marcos and Imelda.
Okay.
Oh yeah, they were actually big fans of bodybuilding.
Really? Oh wow, that's wild.
So I met a dictator and his shoe obsessed wife. You know, I mean, and people have forgotten completely about Ferdinand Marcos. You know, they don't know who he is, and it's like, okay, well,
right.
You know, but it was something, you know, to meet him and then. Just
I remember Ben Weir would always try to get the you know, the leaders of the country wherever they held that World Amateur Championships, the Mr. Universe. He would always try to get them to come to it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, he was there.
Yeah. How was that trip and going over there to the Philippines? That had to be tough, right?
That was rough.
Yeah.
That was a rough trip.
So what made you decide to get back into competition then a few years later and then compete as a pro?
Well, I got married in 84.
Okay.
And there was a guy in town in Clovis, California, named Danny Lamatina, and he made his own equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And he was one of the first guys that made like incredibly heavy duty equipment.
Okay.
And he said, he goes, Gary, He goes, you should start competing again. And I go, what? And he goes, yeah, why don't you get back into it? And you know, I was 28 years old. And I went to the wife and I said, honey, what do you think about this? And she said, yeah, let's give it a shot. So about 6 months after I started driving down to Southern California and making appearances at Goals and Worlds and started getting noticed by a few people. And one guy was doing benches and I spotted him. It was Lyle Alzado.
Oh, really?
He's doing reps with 4.5, you know, so I'm spotting him and you know, he racks it. And I said, Mr. Alzado, I can't believe how strong you are. And he goes, it's Lyle. And I can't believe how big you are. And I just went, whoa.
<That's>
Thank
awesome.
You. You know, so I went from 205 to maybe 240 in 6 to 8 months.
Wow.
And then my debut back in the pros, my true debut, was the mixed pairs with Kay Baxter.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And there was a show before that, but I don't even count that show. Because that was actually when I think I was still single, I'm not sure. But with Kay, you know, I told you I was making appearances in Southern California, and Cliff Dickerson's 40th birthday, I was invited. My wife and I were invited to Chris Dickerson's 40th birthday.
Okay.
And so we went to his place, and it was a big to do, you know, and it was kind of like a who's who of bodybuilding. And Kay was there, and Kay was planning on posing with Steve Davis.
Yep.
Remember Steve?
Yeah, we had him on the show before.
Yeah, you know, tall, you know, kind of long and lean,
yeah.
And you know, and Kay, you know, with her muscularity, and Chris Dickerson comes up and he goes, oh, Gary, I got to introduce you to Kay. He goes, you two need to pose together. he goes and introduces my wife and I, Stacy and I, to Kay, and Stacy and Kay hit it off. And Kay's looking at me and she changed her mind, and we ended up doing that posing routine together at the World Championships in Toronto.
Wow, that's awesome. How'd you guys do?
Yeah, we placed out of the money, but that's one of those shows that we should have won. I mean,
really? Wow.
I think the two of us were far better than anybody there. You know, I mean, Kay looked after the show. She came over and gave me a hug, and she goes, and she was crying. She said, I'm sorry, you lost because of me. And I said, Kay, that's ridiculous. You know, we lost because we lost, you know. Because the judges, you know, the judges, she was one of the first really muscular, you know, heavily muscled
female bodybuilders. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they just weren't ready for that yet. You know, and so anyway, so she and I did a couple of shows together, and I did some other mixed pair stuff. And after that appearance in Toronto, that was when Joe Weider invited me to go to the Olympia. He said, I want you to be in the Olympia contest.
Yeah. How was your experience on that mixed pairs? How did you like that? Because I really liked watching those back in the day, and they don't have that anymore, of course. But a lot of people are saying they should bring that back.
I think it was incredible.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's there's so much you can do. There's so many different things you can do. Kay and I had we posed the Axel F, you know, the theme song from Beverly Hills Cop.
Oh yeah,
and,
okay.
That was I think we were the first ones to do that.
Uh-huh.
And it was, to this day, I still had the pose routine in my head. I could do it, you know. I mean, I'd have to think about it a little bit, but I remember when we were practicing for it, this guy named Swale Fenley was a friend of Kay's, and he was a choreographer, and he put together this routine that was incredibly muscular and sensual at the same time. I mean, it was really just a great routine, and Kay had these long red fingernails, right? And one of the things, I hit a back pose, and she does a back double bicep, you know, lunging back double bicep behind me, and her nails come down my back, and I kind of like move a little bit. I mean, it was just really, you know, we did some really neat things, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, you're right. I mean, that division is so rife for creativity. I mean, you could have so much creativity in that. You could take it in so many different directions. So I think it would be really cool if they brought that back. I think it would help maybe make the posing better again, you know?
Yeah, I think it would. And also, it would look, I was heavily muscled, and so was Kay, but there was balance between our physiques. But, you kind of wonder, where would it go now? If the top competitors, the top Olympians, and, I don't think any of the Mr. Olympias did mixed pairs. Chris Dickerson did. Didn't Chris do mixed pairs?
Yeah,
that's right. That's right. Tony Pearson won a bunch of them.
Yeah, he was winning year after year after Chris stopped doing it, I think.
Yeah, I think he won the year Kay and I were in the Toronto Championships.
So you did a lot of those pro shows too. Now you're coming back in the mid-80s. What did you think of the field back then? The top pros in the mid-80s. Gaspari and Albert Beckles and Mike Christian and Bob Paris, of course Lee Haney.
Lee, when I was competing, I think Lee was in one or two shows a year. He wasn't in very many shows. Rich Gaspari was the one that was really hot when I was competing, and Rich was another guy. He kind of came across cocky, but he was really a nice guy.
Yeah,
he was a gentleman. And it just maybe I say he was cocky because he was always beating me by three or four places. and he had a new look, that vascularity. The vascularity that he had was, it was kind of beyond belief.
Yeah, he was a determined guy. He was very hungry to win.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And I remember when you were in the World Championships, the World Pro Championships in Columbus, because that was on TV, and I saw you compete in that, and then you got interviewed with Arnold after the show, or after you got off stage, I should say.
Uh huh.
And then you did the Olympia that year too, right? And that was also in Columbus.
Yeah, it was in Columbus.
Yeah, how'd you feel doing that? Doing your first Olympia.
Well, it was my only Olympia.
Yeah.
And I definitely was off for that show.
Uh-huh.
That was another one of those things. I'll call it a disappointment. I don't think I was as bad as 15th. I placed dead last. I don't think I was quite that bad, but, again, it goes back to it is what it is. And, my routine, I did what I thought was a decent routine, or at least it was very unique. And, it was criticized, but now people are doing routines like that.
You're laying on the floor, right?
Yeah, I started out laying on the floor.
Yeah. What music did you use to that? Do you remember? Because we actually had a question from one of our listeners, and he asked, hey, if you ever interview Gary Leonard, ask him what music he used at the 86 Olympia.
Fanfare for a Common Man.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I remember that.
It was, and I think people have posed to it since then.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a pretty powerful tune. I mean, I want to say Aaron Copland.
I think Aaron Copland did.
But it was pretty powerful. What happened 4 weeks prior to the Olympia, as I was doing stiff legged deadlifts in the gym, and I blew two vertebrae.
Wow.
I tore some erectors, and when they tore, the disc exploded. I mean, I ruptured two.
Oh, muscles. Wow. Damn.
And then, I was able to keep it together. The guy that taught me, his name was Louis Porcelli. He was with New York City Ballet. Mm-hmm. I met him at Beefsteak Charlie's in New York City. And he actually flew out to Fresno and stayed with me for a couple of weeks with my wife and I, and helped me put together that posing routine. And at the same time, he was a yoga person, and ballet dancer. So we worked on some exercises that kind of helped my back keep together.
Yeah.
A lot of abdominal stuff and things that that kept me upright. And then after the show, I stopped working out and I deteriorated very rapidly. I ended up having back surgery in February of 87.
Yeah, so you didn't compete in 87, then you came back in 88, huh?
Maybe, I don't know. Did I take all 87 off?
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at. Your contest history here, that's what it says.
Yeah, that was kind of a weird, weird time.
Yeah.
That's one of those pains that, you know, yesterday on the radio, they were talking about what's the worst pain there is. And, you know, people are all saying kinds of different things. And I was thinking, okay, well, I know that the sciatica I had put me on the floor. I mean, I would literally, it was the most painful thing you can imagine. You know, it was a hot knife running down the back of your leg out through the arch of my foot to my middle toe. You know,
jeez,
it's
wow.
Searing, burning pain. And then a guy said kidney stone. So I said, that stones wins. I've been an EMT, so I've seen people that have stones. And you can't see. The guy goes, you're rolling around in pain on the floor. You just need to get something to relieve the pain. So I'll get stones on that one. I'd rather have back pain than stones.
So you mentioned you were an EMT. What did you do for a living during this time, during the 80s when you were competing?
You know, I did a lot of different things. I don't think I've had any job more than a couple of years.
Oh, really?
I sold real estate. I worked for my brother selling real estate for a while. And then I worked for Craig and Auto Parts off and on for a number of years. I managed a health food store. Right after the Miss America, I was hired to work at Caesars Palace Lake Tahoe, and I opened up their new health club up there.
Oh, no kidding. How was that?
I worked there for a year, and I got, that's the only job of my life I ever got fired from.
Really? How come?
Being insubordinate.
Oh, really?
So, honestly, I look back on that, and I tell people this now, is I would have fired me too. Knowing what I know now, I would have fired me too. I was just being a jerk to the guy, you know?
And oh, really?
You kind of live and learn, you know?
Uh-huh.
And then the last 15 or 20 years, I've done, I'm a geek, okay? I'm a computer. You know how I talk about obsession?
Uh-huh.
Okay. I spent 8 hours yesterday trying to upgrade a BIOS on an old HP laptop that I have that's loaded with Linux, and I couldn't figure out how to do it. If you know anything about computers, you know what I'm talking about. But Linux, you know, this is all Windows-based stuff, and I'm using a Unix-based Linux system, and I'm trying to upgrade the BIOS. And finally, and this is an old machine. This machine's from 2010, you know, so it's pretty antiquated.
Right.
I get home last night and I swap the old drive back in it that had Windows on it, and I load it right away. So I spent 8 hours. I'm working the security at a ski resort here. They're open during the summer. You know, and like, I'm retired, just so you know. I'm not taking Social Security or anything yet, but I pretty much retired. I was in law enforcement for 5 years.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, and in Idaho, you know what? If you're over 60 and you've got 5 years in, you can retire. So I put five years in the sheriff's office and then retired.
Okay. So now you're enjoying the retirement life.
Well, actually, I got to go to work. Today I have to leave at 11 to go back up on the hill. But I'll tell you, I've got two little granddaughters live up here with my son and his wife. And I'm so blessed, John, you can't imagine how.
That's great.
When I'm talking about quality of life, you know, trying to stay fit and healthy and everything.
Right.
It's a lot to live for. It's a lot to live for.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Gary. Well, I want to thank you for joining us on the show. Like I said, I've looked up to you for years. I read about you in the magazines when I was younger. So it was a pleasure getting to talk to you. And I think you're the gentleman I thought you always would be. So I'm glad you had a chance to sit down and talk with us.
Well, thank you very much, John. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
All right. All right. Take care of yourself.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye. All right. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast. Thanks also to our sponsors, Florida Alternative Medicine and Old School Labs, for sponsoring this episode of the Bodybuilding Legends Podcast. And now I'm going to read this article by Scott Barron. It was in Muscle Mag International, and it was about Scott's experience hanging out with Arnold Schwarzenegger. So you guys are going to enjoy this. Here we go. He said, if you had just one dream that could come true, what would it be? As a teenage college bodybuilder, my dream had always been to meet my idol, Arnold Schwarzenegger. Looking at an ad in a bodybuilding magazine for the 1992 Arnold Schwarzenegger bodybuilding competition, I noticed there was going to be a raffle. The prize consisted of an all-expense-paid trip to California, a visit with Arnold on his Hollywood movie set, and a personal workout with him. Here's my chance to meet Arnold, I thought. Despite the odds, I was confident that I was going to win. I predicted that I would win the raffle. My friends and family responded by either laughter or by telling me not to get my hopes up. Arriving at my hotel in Columbus, Ohio in 1992, I soon discovered that Arnold was being interviewed by the local news team just a few floors up in the hotel gym where I was staying. I grabbed my video camera and I ran up the stairs to the gym. I listened to Arnold being interviewed, and as the interview came to an end, Arnold walked right past me making direct eye contact. After seeing my idol in such close proximity, I knew my dream was coming true. Following the exciting conclusion of Arnold's competition, I was now ready to go to the dinner banquet. An hour later, an announcement was made that the raffle drawing was to be held shortly. Three ticket numbers were called out, but no one came to the podium to claim the prize. Suspense mounted as the fourth ticket number was called. I soon had the feeling of going down a fast roller coaster. My ticket number had been called. My dream, as well as my prediction, had come true. 8 months later, I was flooded with emotions as I sat back in my seat as the airplane took off from Chicago's O'Hare Airport and headed toward California. I couldn't get over the fact that I had predicted that I would win the drawing. After 8 months of intense training, preparation, and waiting, the moment had finally arrived. I was going to meet Arnold Schwarzenegger, the legend himself, in person. As I checked into a fancy hotel, compliments of Arnold, I noticed that a package from Arnold had been placed on my bureau. It consisted of an Arnold t-shirt and a personal note from Arnold asking me to contact his office and to meet him the following morning at World's Gym at 8 a.m. I was very excited and I anxiously awaited our workout. I arrived at World's Gym in Santa Monica the next morning promptly at 8, and I immediately began riding the stationary bike as a warm-up. I soon noticed people staring in the direction of the entrance. I knew that Arnold was making his entry. I'd never seen so many heads turn in admiration of any one person before. But then again, this was Arnold Schwarzenegger, the legend himself. The employee at the front desk informed Arnold of my presence, and he guided them in my direction. As I watched my idol walking towards me, I felt that roller coaster feeling that I had back in Columbus, Ohio, when I won the drawing. I thought to myself, this can't really be happening. I was no longer watching Arnold on a movie screen or reading about him in the bodybuilding books or entertainment magazines. The best bodybuilder, highest paid actor, the Terminator and Predator was walking towards me in person. Arnold's first words to me were, "Are you ready for a great workout?" I assured him that with 8 months of intense training, I certainly was. Working chest and back for over an hour, I must admit that Arnold works out very intensely with very little rest time in between sets. We proceeded to complete at least six sets of the lat pulldown machine and the chest fly, as well as the chest push machine. We then proceeded to do one abdominal machine. The workout was an emotionally as well as physically strenuous one. My dream had come true, and I was actually working out with possibly the world's most famous celebrity. I kept asking myself, am I actually working out with Arnold Schwarzenegger? But with the intensity of the workout, I knew that I was. Arnold was very motivating, making a lot of jokes and giving the entire gym an energetic atmosphere. He talked to me as a friend, making it very easy for me to relate to a superstar of his caliber. He liked having a good time while working out very intensely. Arnold was in great shape, as always. As we completed the lat pulldowns, Arnold's arms were stretching out his World's Gym t-shirt. He wasn't even working arms that day. I couldn't help but notice all the people watching Arnold work out. I wonder what it would be like to be a star of his caliber with the fame, money, and all the recognition. Arnold, on top of all those things, had seven Mr. Olympias and five Mr. Universe titles. I noticed members looking at me, probably wondering who I was. One person even asked Arnold if I was a relative from Austria. As we finished our workout, Arnold introduced me to Joe Gold. This was a workout I'll never forget. After the workout, Arnold drove me in his Humvee, a military vehicle resembling a tank, to his own restaurant, Shotzi on Main, for breakfast. As we were driving down the street, people started waving and honking their car horns, trying to get the legend's attention. Arnold would smile and honk his horn back. I kept thinking, I'm actually driving with Arnold in his Humvee. Arnold talked to me about school and the importance of having a well-rounded life. As we were talking, I noticed Arnold's huge biceps as he steered his semi-tank down the street. I mentioned that even though he wasn't competing, his arms were still huge. His face lit up as I said this, and he lifted his right arm up to make a bicep pose. His arm was unbelievably massive with a very tall peak. For breakfast, Arnold ordered oatmeal with raisins, fresh strawberries, and coffee. While waiting for breakfast to arrive, Arnold gave me a great deal of advice concerning school, work, and training, as well as life issues in general. He mentioned the importance of having a master plan, a list of goals and a plan on how to achieve them. Some to be achieved in a week, others to be achieved in 5 or even 10 years. After the breakfast, Arnold took me to his office for a personal tour. Arnold's office is very impressive. It's a personal museum of his life and accomplishments. His office is filled with movie paraphernalia, posters from all his movies, a Terminator 2 video and pinball machine, and a Terminator robot. Pictures of Arnold from his bodybuilding days hang from the walls. Pictures of his family are also present, as well as pictures of his meetings with presidents. An all-wood room that Arnold referred to as the Austrian room is adjacent to the main office. Arnold's huge desk reflected his nickname, the Austrian Oak, as well as his company's name, Oak Productions. Arnold originally earned the nickname because his Austrian arms were as big as oak trees. I was honored that Arnold showed me around his office, and I'll never forget the experience. Immediately after the office tour, we cruised at high speed in Arnold's Humvee to his Last Action Hero makeup trailer. As we were traveling down the highway, I noticed people practically swerving into other lanes trying to get a closer look at the legend. After arriving, Arnold showed me around the makeup trailer, explaining how some of the things work. Arnold was not scheduled to shoot much that day, but I did have the opportunity to see him in a car chase scene. After all the years of watching Arnold's movies, I was now observing him in action, in person. Everything was so exciting, almost overwhelming. The lights, cameras, wires, the stage equipment. I had absolutely no idea how complicated making a movie actually was. After completing a scene, Arnold took me to an adjoining movie set and introduced me to Clint Eastwood, who was working on the movie In the Line of Fire. I couldn't believe all the famous people I was meeting. Arnold, Joe Gold, and Clint Eastwood. This definitely was a dream come true. We then returned to Arnold's restaurant for an Austrian dinner consisting of chicken and rice. Arnold told me that if you really want to accomplish a goal, you have to work very hard to achieve it. Once you've completed working hard, then you have to work even harder. If you stay 100% focused, determined, optimistic, and objective, then you'll achieve and earn your accomplished goal. After dinner, Arnold took me back to his office and handed me a gift perfectly wrapped in bright red wrapping paper. Arnold said, "I'll see you tomorrow. Perhaps you should go check out some of the famous gyms tonight." Following morning, I met Arnold at his trailer at 11 a.m. He informed me that he was not going to be needed on the set that day, so Arnold, a stuntman, and I headed toward a Japanese sushi bar and restaurant for lunch. Pleasantly and courteously, Arnold signed all autographs of those who sought them in the same down-to-earth manner that I'd come to know. Arnold and the stuntman talked to me about some of the exciting stunts they've accomplished in the past. As my dream experience was rapidly coming to an end, I asked Arnold if I could have his permission to accept the offers I had back home in Chicago to speak on cable television about my experience and to be interviewed by the Chicago Sun-Times. Arnold graciously extended his support. I thanked Arnold for his advice, motivation, and support, and we said goodbye. Sitting in my airplane seat heading for Chicago's O'Hare Airport, I was sad that the trip was over. But as they say, all good things must come to an end. I was going to be 4 hours before we would land in Chicago. I opened my bag and I took out the present Arnold had given me. I sat there looking at it, wondering what was in it. I was going to wait until I got home to open it, but my curiosity was driving me crazy. I opened it up. It was a very nice leather notepad that I would certainly use in college. "Who's the present from?" asked the person sitting next to me. "Arnold Schwarzenegger," I replied. The person wanted to talk more, but I was already writing my master plan as Arnold recommended. I went on to appear on 2 Chicagoland cable television talk shows, and the Chicago Sun-Times ran an article in the Sunday paper about my experience. Arnold is not only the greatest bodybuilder in the world and the highest paid actor, he is a genuine person. He motivated me in training and in school, as well as life in general. I've been more focused and determined since meeting Arnold. I'm doing well as an undergraduate business student and as a personal trainer. I thank Arnold for his generosity of spirit. All right. Thank you, Scott, for that article. You sent that to me. Wow, what an experience. 1992. So Arnold was still pretty young back then. I think he was probably 45, maybe. So I'm sure he looked in great shape. And just, World's Gym is no longer there. Joe Gold, of course, is no longer with us. Clint Eastwood was in great shape and that In the Line of Fire. I love that movie. So, wow, what an experience. And, of course, Arnold was the biggest movie star in the world at that time. So incredible, incredible memories from that, Scott. Thanks for sharing that with us. Those days are gone now. Of course, like I said, a lot of that gym is gone, and Arnold is really not making many movies anymore, so a lot of that stuff could no longer happen. And they don't even do that at the Arnold Classic anymore. They don't even have that raffle drawing And it was interesting how they had it at the dinner, which was the banquet after the contest. Because when I saw them do it, I think they did it at the contest itself. So the fact that the first three numbers they called were not there was probably because it was at the dinner, because I know a lot of people didn't go to that dinner, but I'm sure everybody went to the contest. So Scott got kind of lucky with that. But I thought it was cool that he predicted he was going to go, and he really believed that. And it's amazing when you have that sense of certainty that something's going to happen, that it usually does happen. So that was really, really cool. All right, so that is it for our show this week. Thanks for listening. Thanks to Old School Labs and Florida Alternative Medicine, and to our Patreon sponsors for helping sponsor this podcast. And next week, I'm going to try again to get that anniversary show up. So hopefully I will get it, and I'll keep you guys informed on any new interviews that are coming up. Till then, take care, everybody. See you next week.